KFM West Sacramento, KRXQ HD2 Sacramento, ESPN 1320, Sacramento's sports leader. Always live on the Odyssey app. It's time now to go beyond the headlines. And for the next 2 hours, go where every sports fan wants to go. Behind the scenes and into the practice facilities, locker rooms, coaches' offices, and press boxes to get the info before anyone else. This is the ESPN 1320 Insiders.
Welcome into the Insiders. I am James Hamm. We are, of course, brought to you by Jiffy Lube. Joining me today, Jesse Tapia over there. Hi, Jesse.
In the building again. Been having fun this week, hanging out with you guys, you and Joe.
It's nice, isn't it?
Yeah.
A change of pace for you.
Yeah.
Get you a little more exposure. The hoodie's back today.
It is back today, yeah.
Okay. And I like that you do the earphones over the hoodie.
It's just comfortable, you know?
It's a smart move.
And to be honest, like, the earphones, well, because, like, when I first got here and I was working here and all that, like, we had to share headphones and stuff because, like, ESPN 1320 wasn't the
got
richest.
It.
Didn't have all that money, you know?
Yeah.
So it's like, I'm not going to throw somebody else's ear sweat on my ear. So let me throw the hoodie on.
Got it.
And we'll cover it as well. It's like a comfortability thing as well, because I have the hoodie on when I'm at the grocery store, anywhere. Like, it's just, it's comfortable as well.
Got it.
It's kind
yeah.
of like introvert thing. But yeah, like, no, I don't like, I just, even mine, like, I don't want it touching my ear.
So I bought Kyle his earphones that are over there as a gift because I thought they looked like Kyle.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they've got, like, the root beer brown, like, interior lining and, like, they're white. But I don't like wearing earphones. I don't like having, like, totally boxed in.
They're comfortable. I like how they sound, too, like, just the quality and all that stuff.
Okay.
We're always editing, like, Joe knows and all that stuff. But, yeah.
All right.
I got the same pair as him, and I agree. Like, yeah these are comfortable. And I like to do it with the beanie sometimes. So I get what you're saying because I throw the beanie on and then I put it on.
It just feels weird because it's like, what if I turn into like a UFC fighter and I got cauliflower ear because it's like the ear sweat from this or whatever.
Oh.
That's not going to happen, but it's like.
That's a weird thought.
It's disgusting. I just don't want my ears to be gross.
I'm going to wait for Jesse to come in wearing wrestling.
I'm a podcaster with cauliflower ear.
Don't mess with that guy. Yeah,
wrestling like a headgear for wrestling.
Like, I'm okay.
That'd be amazing.
I'm not even gonna walk down that road. Don't even step on it. So yeah, we're just gonna stay clean.
Okay, things got weird here. I apologize. We are the Insiders.
I don't apologize, by the way.
It's Jesse Tapia over here. We got Joe Brazil behind the glass. We are, of course, brought to you by Jiffy Lube on ESPN 1320, 98.5 HD2. You can find us on YouTube.com/ESPN1320, Twitch, anywhere else that you can possibly watch, listen, and Twitter, all that stuff. So thanks for tuning in. Thanks for joining us. We got to watch the Oklahoma City Thunder punch their ticket to the finals last night.
Yeah, we saw that one coming, huh? I mean, we both called at the end of the show yesterday. I think I said 15-plus Thunder would win. You kind of agreed.
Yeah, yeah. I thought it would be a better competition early on. But
the Thunder had that punch that you expected the Timberwolves to come out with.
Yeah, yeah. And to watch a team that's up against it, that's fighting for their lives, lose the first quarter 26-9.
Yeah, it was over after that.
It's just like
it's just a matter of how much you wanted to watch the rest of the game before you turned it off.
Yeah, I really didn't want to watch the rest of the game. You lose the first quarter 26-9. You lose the second quarter 39-23. And you go down 65-32 at half. I don't think I've seen a drubbing like that. And, you know, like, look, I think there's something about this Oklahoma City team. Like I told Kyle last week, they feel like Thanos. Like, they're inevitable.
Yeah, it's just kind of like there's no real just weakness to them right now. They're one of the best defensive teams, and they're one of the best offensive teams. They got the MVP, and you just got, whether it be the second role player on the, like, Jalen Williams or Chet or whoever, it's just, everyone is just perfect for this team.
That's what I feel like. Very rarely do you see a team that's so well assembled.
Mm-hmm. Maybe Alex Caruso and Hartenstein were the last Infinity Stones that they needed to add.
Exactly. So I think, first of all, Sam Presti is an incredible general manager. This is the third time he's built a big time winner. He has not won a chip. But when you're a general manager that, you know, again, with Seattle, with OKC, in a small market like Oklahoma, that can deliver three MVPs, that can mine the NBA for three MVPs, that's incredible. Like, and I think Shea's just in the beginning stages of winning a bunch.
Yeah, it's the blueprint. I mean, he didn't draft Shea or anything like that, but you drafted Chet Williams and all those guys, and it makes it a lot easier to bring in one guy like Shea to kind of round it all out or start with it.
Yeah, well, that, and when they got Shea, they traded Paul George to get him, and not only did Shea, you know, get traded to OKC, but it included a whole ton of first-round picks, one of which they used to select Jalen Williams. So, like, look, I don't know how teams can repeat what's happened here in OKC, because the problem is that even if you decide to start today, you're the Sacramento Kings, you're like, let's throw it all away, let's dump everybody we can, let's trade Sabonis, let's trade Zach LaVine, let's trade DeMar DeRozan, let's start at the beginning. Even if you did that, the problem is that you don't have Sam Presti on your side.
Yeah, would you like to hope maybe there's a couple Sam Prestis out there and he's not the only great GM that could fix something?
Well, it's not just about being able to fix something. It's about being able to acquire assets in a different way than most people do.
Yeah.
And just think about the game in a different way and bring in as many players, young players, first-round picks as you can. Sort through them. Don't stick on anybody too long that's not going to make it. If they're not developing the right way, you move forward. You know, it's one of those things where, like, it takes a there's a certain brutality to the way that he's a general manager, and it's cutthroat. It's like, hey, Josh Giddey, we like you. You're top, what, six pick. We think you're a good ball player, but you're not good enough for what we're doing. You're not good enough for or the right piece for what we're doing and what we need. So just boom, trading for Alex Caruso. You know, we've seen them waive so many first-round picks.
Yeah, you kind of mentioned that, like Brad Stevens straight away, Marcus Smart for Kristaps Porzingis at the time. That seems weird. Like, it kind of just ties into, like, all, like, if you do have to be cutthroat. You can't just kind of GM with relationships. It's like, oh, we'll keep him around for another year, or we'll see and kind of stick around, and maybe he'll develop. Like, no, if you know or see it then you got to fix it right then and there.
Well, that, and it's really tough to bring along a huge group of young players together, right? That's because players fall off, players fall behind. I guess there is a way in which you can have a big group of players that, like, start fighting together to move forward together. But it just so rarely happens where you see one after another, like, productive draft pick. And I think we can look at it, like, going back to when he built a team with Kevin Durant and then Russell Westbrook and James Harden, where it just, like, boom, 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 he created this atmosphere where, yeah, it's three top five picks, right? But he hit on all of them and was able to develop his staff was able to develop all three of them.
Yeah.
Where, you know, not everybody knew James Harden was going to be a flat out superstar. Russell Westbrook, like, you pretty much knew, like, coming out of college. Same, I'd say the same with KD.
Definitely KD.
Yeah, KD, I mean, I thought he should have been the first pick in that draft. And I thought that at the time, like, watching him as a college freshman dominate the game, lead the NCAA, and I think both scoring and rebounding as a freshman at Texas, was just like, man, why would you not draft him?
Yeah, why wouldn't you draft Michael Jordan either, Portland?
Yeah, yeah. The Greg Oden pick, I mean, that happens. Greg Oden should have been really good too.
Yeah, yeah.
But you knew that Kevin Durant was going to be something different. But watching Presti just continuously put these teams together, it's mind-boggling. It's mind-boggling where you have a team in Sacramento that has had these opportunities multiple times. They've gone all the way back to, you know, the basics multiple times. They've drafted in the top five or top eight multiple times, and they never have this type of not only success but what looks like sustainable success.
You've been here longer than anyone. Like, why? Why do you think that is? We've had GM after GM, just coaches, whatever. Like, just why haven't they been able to get on the right foot? And I guess 2023, the Beam Team season, they did, but I don't know if that was a fluke or they just kind of got complacent after that. Like, why, like, they haven't, why can't they take one, like, the step forward?
I think for me, like, the biggest issue that teams and franchises like the Kings have, and they're not the only ones to do this.
I mean, there's the Charlotte Hornets.
It's the instability. And I'd say even Charlotte has stuck with, you know, they've had moments where they stuck with James Borrego for a long time. They stuck with Steve Clifford for a long time. You look at Washington, Scotty Brooks got, like, a really long run there. It's the constant change that just is so detrimental to young players. And, you know, like, just Keegan Murray, for instance, right? You draft Keegan Murray, and again, you're changing not – sure, he had his coach get fired, like, midway through his third season – but look at how many different roles Keegan Murray's played throughout his first 3 years. And it's because there's no continuity of idea, mm-hmm. right? So when you're building a team, it should be like, hey, let's let Keegan Murray get comfortable in this position and let's just keep building and building and building. And that's not what they do. Instead, they, okay, we need you to be a small forward. Wait, we need you to bulk up and be a power forward. Wait, we need you to defend the best possible player on every single team every night. We need you to defend guards. There is no, like, one pathway forward where you can just see, like, hey, I need to improve at this, this, and this, and so next season I can be a better player. Like, Keegan Murray should have been the last 2 years working on like his off the dribble, mm-hmm. you know, his ability to handle the ball, to take the ball to the basket. And he has.
But it feels like also that's kind of been a backseat type of thing because of the role he's had to take on defense too, I feel.
Exactly. So instead of asking him to take on more of a scoring role and become more of the players that you thought he was going to be mm-hmm. when you took him with the fourth overall pick, you just keep changing what you need from him. And again, it's not in this situation. At least he had the same coach for 2.5 years, but go back to some of the other players that have been here, the De'Aaron Foxes of the world who, you know, started with Dave Yeager, but, you know, went to Luke Walton and Alvin Gentry and Mike Brown and Doug Christie, 5 coaches before he left.
Is Tyreek Evans kind of winning Rookie of the Year? Didn't they kind of switch him up position-wise after that too, or what was the situation there? Isn't that kind of similar?
Tyreek, I'm going to say it's a little bit different because the problem that you had with Tyreek was
just going on the theme of just no stability and just kind of reworking stuff.
Well, that's part of it, right? Like, I'll say this, the problem that one of the bigger problems, my first 2 years covering the team was Tyreek's rookie season. I came in the next season. So he was coming off his rookie season and I had DeMarcus Cousins as a rookie. That was my first 2010-2011 season. First of all, he didn't have a natural position at all. So you're wondering the whole time, like, what are we going to do with this kid? Like, is he a small forward? Is he a shooting guard? He's a shooting guard that can't shoot. Is he a point guard? His family, his brothers wanted him to play the point guard position the whole time. But again, you just kept trying different things to bring in pieces that you thought might work. So in what is second season, the next season, the Kings drafted Jimmer, thinking that Jimmer would be an answer, right? Because I saw the outline of what they were thinking. What they were thinking, Jeff Petrie at the time, he was trying to kind of recreate the Mike Bibby, Doug Christie backcourt and just missed. Yeah. Like, Jimmer just was not an NBA player. And then, of course, Isaiah Thomas was, but Isaiah Thomas wasn't the same type of player. And so now you had to disguise, you know, some of the defensive liabilities of Isaiah Thomas, but also, you know, like just the moxie and everything else was like spectacular. So like the dynamics of those teams just changed so much. And a lot of it was because they had the lowest payroll in the NBA. Like my first 2 seasons, they traded for players at the deadline to get to the floor that they had to be at. They had to get to $58 million. So 1 year they traded for Marquise Daniels and to get to the floor. One season, I believe they traded for Sam Cassell to get to the floor, who these guys never played for the Kings. Like, how many players the Kings traded for during my first 2 or 3 years that never played for the Kings? Like, people forget Larry Hughes was a King. Never played for the
Cavaliers legend.
Yeah, I don't even think he ever came to Sacramento. Jason Terry was a King.
Yeah, the people don't like Jason Terry around here, huh?
Yeah, because when he got traded to the Kings, he asked to be bought out so he could go play for a contender, and the Kings did. And then he went on radio in Dallas and talked trash about Sacramento for no reason.
Just my only memory of Jason Terry is when he got dunked through the floor.
Just ungrateful. Yeah. But it feels like there are always these moments where you're on a pathway and then you lose your pathway. And it's because, you know, whether it's like switching coaches or switching owners or switching general managers, like there's always some new pathway.
Okay, and I know we were tying this in with the Thunder and all that, but let's stick with the Kings. Do you think, like, what's their direction now then? Where do you see this going now?
We don't know yet.
No?
No, I think
because like I see Sabonis and LaVine, and I'm kind of like wondering, like, okay, like what's the direction you're going here?
Well, if I'm them, I feel the same way. Mm. I want to know what the direction is. And then not only do I want to know what the direction is, but it was fine. Monty and Wes had a direction as well. I want to know how you're going to actually
execute
the direction. And that's the problem that I think you're going to have convincing guys like Domas, convincing guys like Zach LaVine. Mm-hmm. Like, okay, this is who we're going to be. And it's like, okay, can you show me that first? And it's like, okay, that's where Scott Perry's got to step in and he's got to figure out how to make this happen. So I think with Domas specifically, it's more of don't tell me anymore. Just show me.
I got you.
Show me what you're going to do. Yeah. All right. This discussion definitely went a different direction than we had planned here in the first, 15 minutes of the show. But that's the way it goes sometimes. We're going to step aside when we come back. I think we'll continue this, but we're also going to talk about how Shai Gilgeous-Alexander and Tyrese Haliburton are taking these like gigantic leaps as players and what it means for the NBA. We're the Insiders here on ESPN 1320, brought to you by Jiffy Lube. We'll be back in just a minute.
You're listening to The Insiders with James Hamm and Kyle Madsen, sponsored by Jiffy Lube on ESPN 1320 and 98.5 HD2, Sacramento's sports leader. Now, back to The Insiders, brought to you by Jiffy Lube on ESPN 1320.
Welcome back into The Insiders. I'm James Hamm. Jesse Tapia is joining me today. Kyle Madsen is away. He's taking a week off and like seeing every concert known to man, having a good time out there.
He saw Stray Kids again last night, I believe.
Yeah, I think it's just he's just going to follow them.
Shout out Kyle Madsen. He's having the time of his life.
Yeah, he's just living the K-pop life.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's very, very intriguing. Yeah. Oh, to be 34 again.
I'll get there in a few years.
Get there at some point. Yeah, Stray Kids, and then I think Kendrick Lamar tonight?
Maybe. I don't know. Yeah. Whatever. Actually, yeah, I think it is tonight.
Yeah, it is tonight at Oracle Park again. Oh. Was Stray Kids not at Oracle Park last night?
Yeah, because I saw his video yesterday. So
that was at Oracle Park, right? Yeah.
Maybe
yeah,
he just like hid out somewhere and just like slept there.
Yeah.
Make it into content. Hey, I spent the night at Oracle Park without getting caught.
Overnight challenge.
Exactly.
At Oracle Park.
That would be a good topic here on The Insiders.
Oh, yeah. I was like, yeah, found my way to the janitor's closet. Nobody saw and then just fell asleep in left field after that.
That's right.
Yeah.
Kyle is living the life right now. He's living
Kyle
the life.
Madsen.
So we're very happy for Kyle to get away. Will
in the chatty house says he's on his way to SF for Kendrick right now.
Oh, there we go.
Leezy's going out there too.
Shout out
for Leezy.
All right. A lot of people are going to see Kendrick Lamar.
You guys are both big concert guys?
I'm a huge concert guy. Yeah. Like I've seen so many concerts, it's crazy.
Yeah, same. No, yeah, I'm huge. Even before this job, like I had been going to concerts frequently. So it tied in perfectly. Yeah.
You're not going to catch me at a Stray Kids or Kendrick Lamar concert.
No, you probably just stick to your bag and all that.
I've seen quite a few different bands, but also a lot of older stuff. Mm. Yeah. So a lot more low key than what Kyle is.
I got you. Kyle seems like he's on the floor right next to the stage, it seems.
Absolutely.
Like.
Yeah.
Although, I did go see like Timberlake at Golden One. That was
sounds
wild.
Like it'd be fun.
He was, I was wondering the whole time, like, was he wearing, like, a step counter? Because mm-hmm. I thought he'd probably taken, like, 30,000 steps, like, during the show.
Yeah.
He had, like, this really, really long stage that went all the way through the middle of the crowd, and he was up and down, like, the entire time. I thought, man, this is exhausting. Yeah, so I've seen him there. I saw Maroon 5 there at Golden One. I mean, I've been to, like, 12 shows, 21 Pilots. But then a whole bunch of older stuff.
I need to become more of a concert guy, maybe. Here, kind of see.
I've already talked about this with James and Kyle, where I'm taking you guys to Aftershock this year.
Oh, no, brother, I'm not going to Aftershock.
Yeah.
No.
I don't know.
Yeah, I'm not going to Aftershock.
I think Thursday night at Aftershock is supposed to be off the charts, right?
It's
going
to be insane.
Aftershock used to be cool, though, because I used to live right by Discovery Park, and you'd hear like the music and just your apartment or whatever.
Most people,
dope, yeah.
That's the cool thing about Aftershock is most of the people in the surrounding community are like for it.
Yeah, my dad has been trying to get me to go to Aftershock the last couple years, actually. He likes to go out there.
Yeah. Well, look at Drew Down. Here in the chat, he said, Joe Brazil strikes me as a Jonas Brothers guy.
There it is. And yeah, and thank you for John. He is a Jonas Brother. I'm Joe Jonas.
There you go, right there.
There you go.
And Aldrin J., I'm probably not going to a Janet Jackson concert unless my wife wants to go, because my wife is a big Janet Jackson fan and met Janet Jackson when she was young. So maybe we'll go to a Janet Jackson concert. All right, let's get back into this. We get detoured all the time on the show, which is it's just part of the fun. We did have the game, the final score last night. The Thunder, you know, they win the series 4-1. It's 124-94. It wasn't even that close, to be honest with you.
Once the Thunder jumped out to that late in the beginning, like you said, like we were expecting the Timberwolves to. It was like, all right, we know this is over. The Timberwolves just aren't going to have it tonight.
No. They didn't have it from the opening tip, and you're mm-hmm. like, what in the world happened? Like, how could you not be ready for this moment? And, like, they might feel the same way that I do, that, like, hey, nobody's stopping the Thunder this mm-hmm. season. Shout-out to Chet, who had 22 points. Jalen Williams had 19. I think it's really crazy to see a young trio, because Shea had 40, but a young trio of players, like, show up like this in the playoffs and just – like, take the step that everybody's been waiting for.
And they took it kind of fast, wouldn't you think?
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Like, Chet missed a year, but this all, like, last year they won 62 games, I believe, something around, or maybe 57, I think, because they were close with the Nuggets, I think. It was around there. Either way, you get the point. But you kind of expect teams like this to fail a little bit, and they've just already taken the next step, where it's like, everyone's just expecting them to kind of walk over the Pacers, too, if that's who they play in the finals.
Well, I think a lot of people, not exactly the way this happened, but I think a lot of people expected them to stumble a little bit here and there mm-hmm. in the same way that the Cavs did.
Yeah.
Because their trajectory is very similar to the Cavs. You know, the Cavs won a bunch of games last year and then won even more this year. I think that they won 64 or something like that.
Yeah, I think they might actually won 62 this year.
Yeah.
That might be the number I'll stuck on.
No, they won 64.
Oh, 64.
Yeah, Boston won 61. And OKC won 68. Those are your only 360 win teams. And to be honest with you, those are the only three teams in the NBA that won more than 52. Mm-hmm. So there's this huge gap between the top three teams and then who was next. But OKC, I kind of felt it like right away, like, oh no, this is not one of those teams that's going to have to take time to get better. Because they added the veterans that you kind of knew that they needed to add.
Because Caruso's not just some role player. He's been an all defensive team type guy and all that over his career. So
yeah, and he's so good defensively. And the crazy thing is that he didn't make first or second team because Lu Dort made first team. Jalen Williams. Yeah, Lu Dort made first team. Jalen mm-hmm. Williams made second team. So Caruso and Shea don't make all NBA defensive team because you can't have four of them on the squad. But realistically, they do. They have like four all NBA defenders, caliber defenders.
We're talking about the vet additions they made too. Like we mentioned, Sam Presti doesn't waste time. We saw last year they needed size. So you go and add Isaiah Hartenstein and it's like, boom, you got it right there. They're ready to go. Like there was no, we're going to wait or see what it is here.
Yeah. And I think the interesting thing I'll say about that one too is they overpaid Hartenstein by a ton. But it doesn't matter. First of all, they had the money to spend because they have kept their cap flexibility really well. You know, we talked about it the other day. For next season, they're at $172 million in dedicated salary, 13 players under contract. So Hartenstein's never going to get that $30 million contract again.
Yeah.
But that doesn't matter. He'll probably stick around and play the rest of his career there because he just made a whole bunch of money up front.
And he'll likely be a champion.
Yeah, and I started something early before we got going. Casey Tucker in the chat said, he said OKC is going to be a force for the next few years until they have to start paying luxury tax on their stars. Defensive system and personnel are dominant. The weird thing, they're not going to have problems because the salary cap it's almost like Sam Presti, like he built this team to succeed and then to be in the era where the salary cap jumps 10% every year because of the new television deal. So what they did is they chose instead of the players union and the owners, they negotiated this instead of having just 1 year where the salary cap jumps like $40 million bucks and a bunch of randos get all kinds of money, they decided to tier this thing so it goes up 10% every year. A smoothing of the cap is what they call it, yeah. Right? What that means is that, you know, it doesn't sound like that much, 10%, but when the salary cap's $155 million bucks, that means it goes up $15.5 million. And then the next year, it's going to go up, you know, because it'll be at 180, 170, it'll go up $17 million. So as your team is getting better and as they're growing, when you sign your players to contract extensions, it's usually the most you can give them is an 8% raise. So while they're getting 8% raises, the NBA salary cap is jumping 10%.
Yeah.
Right?
So we kind of planned this out, you're saying?
Yeah, it looks like he planned this out to when the television contract was going to hit, because we get a couple of years into this build and Harkenstein's big dollar money is going to fall off. You're going to have to pay Jalen Williams. You're going to have to pay Chet. But all of their role players are locked up on long-term reasonable deals, $8 million a year, $9 million, $10, $11. They're all reasonable deals. And when you're looking at percentage of the salary cap, like in 2 years, a $10 million contract is going to be like 5.5% of the salary cap. So you've managed this thing so incredibly well. I don't think they're going to run into a problem. They might have a player who steps up and is just way better than they thought, right?
Yeah, you can see Chet taking a jump or whoever.
Well, no, because you're already expecting Chet and you're already expecting Williams.
You're talking about one of the role players.
And you're talking about, and then you have Shea. The rest of them, they're going to be, you know, right around $10 to $15 million players from here on out.
Well, what do you think they'd pay Chet? Like, do you think they'd pay him like he gets a max, right?
He's close. He's okay. Close to max money.
Because I wonder, like, if they're looking to pay him maybe a little bit less than the max, is maybe he just hasn't jumped out to what he was expected to be as a number two pick, but someone else in the league is willing to pay him however much. Like, I wonder if that's a way you lose guys.
No, it's possible, yeah. But I don't think they're going to. So, because I think what's going to happen is the moment that Chet's contract kicks in, Harkenstein's going to drop.
I got you.
And again, Harkenstein's not getting that money again. He might be a guy who signs at 345. As opposed to the $30 million he's getting this year and last year, like that giant, well, this year and next year, those giant numbers. That's not going to continue, but they were able to do that because of where they were financially. Mm-hmm. They were able to just grossly overpay for like a middle-of-the-road role player, but a guy who fits their system perfectly.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think it's really it's fun to watch a team that just like figured it out. I think they're going to be great for a long time. And it kind of brings us back to the discussion that we were aiming to have. It's that it's all predicated on Shea Gilgeous-Alexander becoming great. And to be honest with you, I don't know why it is that we overlook OKC as the spectacular great team that they are, and why we overlook Shea, because even like in our discussions about who's going to win the MVP, the discussion kept coming back to this point that, you know, again, Jokic is a 3-time MVP, should be a 4-time MVP, and he just posted a triple-double. He averaged a triple-double for the season. And it's like, well, Shea's going to win the MVP because he's, you know, the best player on the best team. He's leading the league in scoring. Jokic is still the better player, but Shea is, you know, he's going to win the MVP this year because everyone's kind of, they've got Jokic, you know, they're over it, right? Yeah. Like, there has to be a moment here where, like, as people who talk about sports on the radio or people who write about sports or talk about sports on social media, we have to acknowledge that Shea Gilgeous-Alexander is probably the best basketball player in the world right now.
You say that, but, like, do team situations matter, though? Because, like, if you were to flip Jokic and Shea and make the rosters work, then it's like Jokic is like, I don't know. I guess it's the context of it all, because I don't nearly disagree. If we want to call Shea the best player in the league right now, he won MVP, average 30 a game and all that, team's about to win the finals. Like, I wouldn't even fight you, but I do get the other side where it's like, if you do want to argue, it's still Jokic. It's like, I mean, Jokic probably did as much as he could with not like Michael Porter Jr. looked like his shoulder was ready to fall off his arm and all that.
Okay, but we have to acknowledge the fact that they won 18 more games than Jokic's team.
Yeah.
In the regular season.
And I don't nearly disagree, but I do see like the other side where it's like, well, if we still hold on to Jokic.
Okay, so once we get past Shea, right? Their next best player is Jalen Williams at 21.6, which is, if I'm not mistaken, it's right around, almost spot on what Jamal Murray averaged, right?
Yeah.
Then we get past that, and the next leading scorer is Chet Holmgren at 15 points per game. So he's in the Aaron Gordon range, but not in the Michael Porter Jr. range, who averaged more. So, like, I don't know. Like, we can't say, like, if you put De'Aaron Fox on the Oklahoma City Thunder, they're not winning 68 games.
Yeah.
If you take Jaylen Brown and put him on the Oklahoma City Thunder, they're not winning 68 games. Jason Tatum, not going to happen. Like, Luka, not going to happen. I don't think.
But you're saying if Tatum and, like, Luka are on this Thunder team and play some SGA, yep, they're not winning 68?
Yep.
James, I don't know. Like, I thought I was going to agree with you going into it before the show, but it's like, a guy like Jokic is an all-time great, could, when it's all said and done, be like one of the 10 greatest players of all time. And it's like,
I agree.
We're willing to call Shea better than him right now?
Shea's averaged over 30 a game 3 years in a row. He's one of the most consistent scorers we've ever seen in the NBA.
Yeah.
What did he scored 31 points last season, not this season, but last season. I think it was 31 on the dot. It was something like 39 times. It's just like astronomical how consistent he is. And we can not like the foul grifting. I hate to tell you, but James Harden, Luka Doncic, Trae Young, LeBron James, they're all foul grifters.
I got you. I'm pulling up Jokic's numbers right now. I mean, Jokic has been 24 plus, I don't want to cheat anyone, since the 2020-21 season. Like, he's been doing it consistently as well. It's just, I mean, I can't. Your logic is right, and I completely understand. I get the fight that you're trying to go for, but I can't. I don't know. I can't say that SGA is just better. Like, he's one of the three best players in the league. I can give you that.
Okay, so I'm gonna say this. Like Polo L here in the chat, he says the Thunder win 45 games without Shea.
Mm-hmm.
I'm gonna disagree. I think they win 38 games without Shea. Look at the team. Like, again, we can say, like, oh man, they're really coming into their own in the playoffs, and Chet's averaging like 18 they're a game in the playoffs. But
you wouldn't have them better than this past year's Kings team, who won 40.
Take him off the roster.
Oh yeah, I got you. It's still, you don't think Jalen Williams can maybe get you 23, 22 a game or 24 a game or
the
whatever?
The only way it would work is if Jalen Williams averaged 35 a game and they found somebody else to average another 5 points a game. I don't see, like, again, look at, you're not getting more than 10 points a game out of Isaiah Joe. You're not getting more than 12 points a game out of Aaron Wiggins. You're not getting more than 11 out of Hartenstein, 10 out of Dort. Maybe you get 12 points out of Dort. Like, this, the team, the depth of this team is so predicated on the greatness of Shea. That's where I'm at, man.
I got you. Like I said, your argument makes complete sense, but
this is a group of randos. Like, I'm not saying that it's...
Wait, who's a group of randos? The Thunder?
The Thunder.
No, I can't. You can't do that. Lou Dort has been, like, he's a great defender who's been, like, just, like, an all-defensive type defender, like, for a few years. Like, that's not randos. Like, those are guys who, like, all-defensive teams. That's not randos.
Okay.
Isaiah Joe's a rando, but not, like, Caruso or any of those other guys.
But the rest of them, Caruso, this... So, people know, Caruso averaged 7 points a game this season.
That's fine, but I guess you can't be an all-defensive type player over your career and be like, yeah, he's a rando, like...
Kasem Wallace in the rotation.
Second-year player, but it looks like he kind of could be something, right?
Averaged 8.4 points per game.
I'm
telling you this.
You are indirectly disrespecting this Thunder team to prop up Shea, and I won't let you do it.
No, this system works because Shea's there. I we can keep going. You know,
we can go back and forth, whatever. This is radio, too, so we don't have to make sense as well. Like, this is sports, whatever.
Let's fight about this after the break.
I got you.
We're going to continue this because I think we can add in the Tyrese Haliburton discussion as well into this and kind of grow it from there. So we're the Insiders here on ESPN 1320, brought to you by Jiffy Lube. We'll be back in just a minute.
You're listening to The Insiders with James Hamm and Kyle Madsen, sponsored by Jiffy Lube on ESPN 1320 and 98.5 HD2, Sacramento's sports leader. Now, back to The Insiders, brought to you by Jiffy Lube on ESPN 1320.
Welcome back into the Insiders. I'm James Hamm. Joining me, Jesse Tapia. And we've got Joe Brazil behind the glass. We're, of course, brought to you by Jiffy Lube. And we're in an epic debate over the value of Shai Gilgeous-Alexander.
Yeah, you call the OKC guys randos, and I think that's Denver, if we're being real here.
Denver has... I don't
Brother, think... they got the corpse of Russell Westbrook. All right, okay. Sorry, Dame. I'm sorry, but...
Yeah.
Okay. Michael Porter's Jr. Michael Porter Jr., who's got a shoulder like a bunch of ribs ready to fall off the bone.
But he's not a rando. He's a guy who's not a rando, averaged like 18 to 20 a game for 5 years.
Julian Strother, rookie, but like he just stepped up.
Yeah. Okay. So they do have some randos at the end of the bench because they got depleted.
Yeah.
For sure.
Guys who had to get minutes, though.
Okay.
Christian Braun, like, he's more of a rando than Alex Caruso would be. I don't want to disrespect Christian Braun, but, like...
I'm not saying Alex Caruso. Alex Caruso's not a rando, but Isaiah Joe, Aaron Wiggins, Cason Wallace, like, these guys are. They are randos.
That's fine. Those guys can be randos. That's fine. But also, I don't think this team is only winning 38 games either if you take SGA off. Like, I think given how everyone plays defensively, like, you'll get... They're not winning 68 games, no doubt. They're probably not even winning 55 or whatever, but I think they'd win 40-plus still.
Every team in the league, they focus all of their attention to slow down SGA. If that doesn't happen, what do you think Jalen Williams is going to face?
Well, it's like on the Indiana Pacers, though, kind of, let's just bring them all in here. Like, sometimes, like, Tyrese Haliburton isn't going for 30 a game, but they have a system that works as everyone kind of does their job. I feel like that's kind of the system that the Thunder could run if you take SJ off there. It's not going to be some guys going for 30 that night every night, but hey, maybe Chet gave you 25 or 27. Maybe J-Dub gave you 25 or 27 this night and stuff like that. Caruso had a decent shooting night or whatever, you know? Like just things like that where you kind of lean on that more so. SGA, we need 35 from you today.
Okay, so my rebuttal would be that Shai averaged 6.4 assists per game. Jalen Williams, 5.1. No one else on the team more than 3.8 assists. Who's even passing the ball in that system?
Alex Caruso, you're running point. Like, I don't know, James. Like, it's not going to be that bad is my point. They're not winning 38 games.
They're going
like,
to be...
I can't give you the stats for every player and stuff like that, but I do think you have a good enough squad where it's like, yeah, you could get good... you could get wins out of here.
I don't know.
And again, maybe you're a play-in team and you're playing the Lakers in the 7-8 matchup or something like that, but... I don't think it'd be 38.
Alex Caruso's career high in assists per game was 4.
Like I said,
he's not a natural point guard.
If you don't have an SGA, Sam Presti is going to look and like you're not finding an SGA caliber player, but you're going to find a point guard or whatever, someone to fill that role and kind of like it's not just take SGA and you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I get it, but now you're changing things.
Hey, this is radio, whatever. I'm trying to make sure I win this argument, I guess.
I don't think you're going to win it. I'd also say this. We're watching like Shai take the leap.
Yeah.
But also we're watching Haliburton take the leap.
Yep.
And again, Halliburton's style of play is so unique that so much of what they do is predicated on his passing versus Shai's like shooting. But I think we're getting really close to the like yesterday sort of our discussion was like Haliburton is a superstar.
Yeah.
We have to acknowledge that now that he's reached the point where when you start putting up 30, 15, and 14 in the playoffs, in the Eastern Conference Finals, you're probably a superstar, right? And I think it's funny because if we shift the conversation to face of the league, I think Haliburton has a better chance of being the face of the NBA than Shai, and it's strictly because of his personality.
Yeah, Tyrese is way more animated, and that's not like a problem with Shai. He just isn't, but Tyrese was doing the choke sign against the Knicks and all that, even though they hadn't won at the time, and he's just kind of, he's just out there. I feel like the people love Tyrese too, whether it's like on social media or just analysts watching the game. Like everyone just loves Tyrese Haliburton, so you're always going to prop that up more when he does that, has his antics and all that stuff, because it doesn't really bother me. People get frustrated by Tyrese because he'll talk trash when they're up or whatever. But to me, it's just personality. It's just who he is on the court. And like that stuff doesn't bother me at all.
No, it doesn't bother me either. Like the one thing you know, and covering him too, like when things went bad,
yeah,
he wore it. Like you wear the hoodie. Like there were a couple of press conferences where he wore a hoodie like pulled over his face. Mm-hmm. And I remember there was a night where the Kings lost by like, it was something bad at home. It was like 33 at home to Atlanta or something. Well, no, maybe it wasn't the Atlanta game. Maybe he referenced the Atlanta game. And somebody asked him, hey, is this like the lowest point? And he goes, what are you talking about, the lowest point? He's like, no, we lost by like 45 last year at home. He's like, that was the lowest point. Like, this is not a good point,
yeah.
And it's a low point, but no, it's gotten worse. It's been worse, so no. And so I've seen, like, the dark side of him because, like, he loves to win, and he hates to lose, and you see it, like, so dramatically on his face and the way that he acts, and I think that that's, you know, reason why people either love or hate him.
Yeah.
Like the antics, I'm not a WWE guy, but like the antics of him and like...
Well, like B. Perry in the chat house right here brings it up right here. He brings the WWE show to his games. Like you said, it's just the antics and the entertainment. Leezy also says he embraces the moment and the entertainment. He's just... He's aware of the show too, I think. Like it's not just a basketball game, you know? Like where these guys... Like Kyrie Irving just wants to play basketball. Jokic just wants to play basketball. Like Tyrese... wants to play basketball as well, but he's aware of everything else that goes on with it. I think he plays into it a bit, which is a fun thing.
I think so too. And, you know, a little bit of the Jason Williams thing, right? Mm-hmm. Where Jason Williams was like the ultimate showman.
Yeah.
Like he did so many stupid things on the court, but it didn't matter because when it was right, when he hit it, you're like, oh man, that was like one of the most amazing things I've ever seen. Now, how many times I watched him pull up off the dribble with 22 seconds on the shot clock from like 26 feet in an NBA that did not like that? He was so far above, like before the curve with the like ridiculously bad shots. And his didn't go in like Steph. Like, yeah. You know, there were plenty of misses, but there's a certain showmanship quality to him. And again, I think there's a certain workmanlike quality to Shea that. Like, it's never going to garner the same type of, like, I don't know. Even, like, James Harden has a certain flair to him, right? Shea just hasn't bought into that, you know?
It's, like, Harden's got, like, even just, like, he's got the beard. Like, just things that people can kind of gravitate to and stuff like that. Like, not that the beard is, like, a thing, but it's just kind of, like, his little branding thing or whatever. Like, Shea doesn't have, like, a brand I think he's kind of latched onto yet where it's, like, his thing, you know?
Well, remember James Harden had the shimmy, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, like there are certain things that Shea just doesn't.
Yeah, like, it's just like there's no brand to Shea, I feel.
Yeah, his brand is to go out there and just beat you.
Yeah.
And to win the game. And to me, there's a lot of respect needs to go into that. Mm-hmm. It's a little bit more LeBron James-esque because LeBron doesn't, like, the antics aren't there. The pregame, like, that stuff and, you know, the crazy dunks and stuff, but. It kind of feels like Shea, like personality-wise, like more subdued and everything else.
So. Yeah, LeBron's got that little step celebration he does too now. It was more of a Miami thing, I think. We don't see it too much now, but...
Yeah, he did spend a lot of time in South Beach.
Yeah, he's a little funny too when he comes up injured or whatever. He might stay on the floor for a few minutes.
I'd also say, like, he's in his 40s.
Yeah.
Like, it does take a while to get off the floor at that point.
It's a good point. LeBron is, 40 years old.
Yeah. And he's had plenty of time to kind of look at it and you know, figure it all out.
Shout out LeBron.
I just think it's an interesting conversation. Like, we've been sitting here waiting for the next generation of NBA players to step into the spotlight, and they are. And I think a lot of people are just missing it.
Mm-hmm.
It's like the next generation is Tyrese Haliburton, it's Shea Gilgeous-Alexander, it's Jalen Brunson, and it's Anthony Edwards. And I think Anthony Edwards and Jalen Brunson, like, they faded pretty hard. I think Brunson is at least been, like, relatively consistent. He's been picked on defensively.
They just ran into a bigger star, if anything.
Yeah.
Like, it's not... Like, Brunson's been fine or whatever, but it's just the Pacers have just been better and taking the moment more than that series.
Yeah, I would agree.
And then Anthony Edwards just ran into a buzzsaw. I'm sorry. Like, they had no shot in this series.
Yeah, and I also think that Anthony Edwards, he's only 23 still. Mm-hmm. I just don't think he has taken... I mean, he's got his team to the Western Conference Finals 2 years in a row, so you can't say that he's not doing his job. But he also doesn't have the right players around him to fully take that next step.
And I wonder what direction the Timberwolves want to head, because, like, you got to the Western Conference Finals last year, and we all know, like, you traded a better player in Karl Anthony Towns to the Knicks for, like, I'm not going to call him a lesser player in Randall, but probably a tier below.
Yeah,
a tier below in Randall. And it's kind of like, all right, what are you trying to win titles here? Are you trying to save money or give me the aprons or whatever? Like, just kind of, what is your plan here?
Yeah, I think it's one of the more... like that team specifically, you don't know where they're headed, you know, because this is a pretty disappointing way for their season to end. And I guess you can hope for organic growth from guys like Anthony Edwards to take another step and be like a 30, 32 point per game guy. You think that like McDaniels can take another step as a player, but they also have, you know, like major decisions. You know, we talked about it yesterday, Julius Randle has a $30 million player option, and he might think he can go get more money somewhere else.
Well, that, and you got guys like Rudy Gobert who are just like, you're here, but like, brother, we can't even play you in the playoffs right now.
Dude, I don't even want to. I went in and looked at the Gobert. He is such a bust as a playoff player.
Yeah. He's like, unplayable in the playoffs. We see it every year. Come playoff time, like, it's great. Regular season, whatever. Come playoff time, he go grab some bench.
Yeah.
This is every time, every year, whether it be the Jazz or this team now.
He had the one game where against the Lakers, who have no center, where he put up 27 and 24. In the other 14 games, he averaged 6.7 points and 7.5 rebounds per game. He's the weakest link on that team, and it's not even close.
Yeah. They gave Tyrese the most overrated player moniker or whatever from the Athletic vote and all that. That's Rudy Gobert.
It is Gobert.
Yeah, easily.
Yeah, yeah, very crazy. All right, we're going to step aside. When we come back, we got a little bit of DeMar DeRozan spoke on a podcast. We'll continue some of this discussion and how it kind of plays into where the Kings are and how do they find their guiding star. And that's going to be probably the biggest challenge for Scott Perry moving forward. We're the insiders here on ESPN 1320. James Hamm, Jess Tapia, Joe Brazil over there. Brought to you by Jiffy Lube. See you in just a minute.
You're listening to The Insiders with James Hamm and Kyle Madsen, sponsored by Jiffy Lube on ESPN 1320 and 98.5 HD2, Sacramento's sports leader. To Sacramento, ESPN 1320, Sacramento's sports leader. Always live on the Odyssey app. Welcome back to hour number two of the ESPN 1320 Insiders. Get ready for the most up-to-date sports news and talk with the ESPN 1320 Insiders.
Welcome back into hour number two here on the Insiders. James Hamm, Jess Tapia joining me today. Kyle Madsen's out all week. We've got Joe Brazil on the ones and twos. Of course, we're brought to you by Jiffy Lube. Make sure to swing by a local Jiffy Lube. Get your car ready for the summer months that are upon us. It's supposed to be 100 degrees this weekend.
Yeah,
like
I'm
tomorrow.
I'd be saying, like, yeah, I'm not looking forward to it. I'm not leaving my house, bro. I'm turning on the AC. Like, I'm going to be okay. Like, I'm not going outside.
Yeah.
I'm
with you.
Yeah. Like I'll take the dog out to maybe go for a walk in the morning or in the evening. So we'll be all right.
I'll probably get up and take a walk with the wife. Mm-hmm. Our oldest has been walking with us lately, which is good. But we'll probably do that like around like 8 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
You know, or maybe, you know.
I'm a big walk guy too.
Yeah. We've been doing a lot of walking. Like trying to get back in better shape. And
shout out to anyone who's got to work outside, though, in that heat. That's not fun at all.
I'm going to be in the heat, baby. Let's go.
That's your rite of passage, though, is a street team promotion.
Let's
I remember
go.
We'd be at Thunder Valley for some concerts. I'm just, all right, does anyone have any water bottles?
Yep.
Just sweating.
Hey, I remember Papa Roach at Concerts in the Park last year. It was like 110, I think. But hey, I'm looking forward to it. I'm going to be outside all weekend.
When I got the call for that job, I was doing a side job at the time for the summer, helping a friend lay out concrete and stuff. And we're leaving the dump. And it's already like 100 degrees, 9 o'clock in the morning. And the promotions person at the time, like, hey, Jess, do you want to come work? Yep, I'll be there whenever you need me.
Oh,
yeah.
That's miserable.
Yeah, I left that job after that.
Yeah. I don't miss that. I helped build the downtown plaza when I graduated from high school. I went right into, like, when they built the plaza, when it went from like the K Street Mall to the downtown plaza, and I worked swing shifts, so we started at three to midnight, and it was like 104 like almost every day.
I
would like drink a Gatorade and sweat the entire thing out.
Shout out to you outside workers, that's tough.
Yeah, it is tough. It's a tough life.
Legends out there.
Let's get back into this. First of all, we got some minor things we'll kind of run through. First, the A's lost again last night. They are not playing well at all right now. I think they've lost 13 out of 14. They're down to a 23 and 33 record. They're 10 games under 500. which has all happened like in the last 2 weeks.
Yeah, is the story with the A's, you guys helped me out here, Joe, as well. Is the story with, like, I know all the Sacramento stuff, we can leave that to the side, but it's just, this is a team with young players that you're just kind of watching to see how they develop this year? Because I know a lot of people were talking, oh, they might be 500, blah, blah, blah. Are you just watching Jacob Wilson tear the ball up and all that stuff? Like, just the young guys kind of play and see where it falls?
Really, for me, the biggest issue that they have is that their bullpen is just horrible.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, they did not spend any money at all on their bullpen this summer.
You don't say.
And, well, I mean, they did.
They did on Severino and stuff, but yeah.
Yeah, they paid Severino. They paid Lawrence Butler. They paid Rooker. But the problem is, if you don't pay for a bullpen, you're going to be in a bunch of trouble. And so Mason Miller has not been all that effective here after the first, like, 3 weeks of the season. He's been very hittable. And then the rest of the guys are just, you know, like, nobody has a bunch of Major League Baseball experience. And it's tough because that's where, you know, what was the stat? The A's have given up, they lead the league. They're tied, I think, with the Yankees with most grand slams given up this season with five.
Mm-hmm.
All five have come in the month of May. Like, in the first 22 days of the month of May, they've given up five grand slams. Like, you can't compete with that.
Yeah, no.
And almost all of those are bullpen. So you're having guys, you know, load the bases and then somebody else is coming through and not being able to close the game out. So really, really rough. Although our guy, Jacob Wilson, is absolutely crushing it. He was 2-for-4, hit his seventh jack yesterday. He's batting .353.
I'd be pretty shocked if he wasn't Rookie of the Year this year.
Oh, right now he's the Rookie of the Year.
I don't even know who's close.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think Kurtz could have given him a run for his money because All of a sudden he started hitting home runs. But then he's on the injured list with a hip flexor. So he's going to be out for a little bit. The Giants fell again, fell yesterday as well. That's 3 in a row for the Giants. They're 31 and 25, 6 games over .500. They're playing well. They lost to the Tigers. Interleague play is like so strange still. Like, I know it's been around for, like, you guys only know interleague play, but for years and years and years, there was no commingling of.
I don't get that either. Like, I think that's worse.
See, I'm pro DH.
Yeah, me
so,
too as well. Yeah,
like, I love
David Ortiz.
Yeah, I love that every team now, the National League also has a DH.
Unless Carlos Zambrano was hitting, I couldn't care less. Yeah. That's the only guy who was hitting home runs, and like I said, it was even for a pitcher.
Yeah, I was always like, why are we doing this? How come why are you making a guy go up there who's batting 100 who's not even like, who's like,
well,
swinging,
he bunted again.
Weekly striking out every single time, doesn't want to hurt himself. I never understood it. So just like,
I miss it.
Really?
I miss pitchers hitting. Yeah, absolutely.
He's a Giants fan. He's not like us AL guys we're just seeing bombs hit all over the park and stuff like that.
You know, funny enough, I just was watching Bumgarner's home run highlights. But
that's
even
him and Zambrano were the ones who can actually hit.
Yeah.
If, like I said, four pitchers.
It just adds an extra element of excitement when that pitcher finally does get that big hit.
How do you feel about your Giants?
You know, the pitching is the least of my worries, especially we moved Doval back to the closing role, which was the right move, absolutely. And then we got guys like Randy Rodriguez and whatnot in the bullpen. Ryan Walker, of course. The bullpen and the pitching, it's still locked in, no doubt. But the hitting's got to go, man. I mean, the bats aren't swinging right now, and your pitching can only get you so far. If you're only putting up one or two runs a game, like, it's just not going to happen. So we need Bailey to start hitting. We need all of our first basemen to start hitting. We need our shortstop to start hitting.
Yo, Brazil says the Giants need bats.
Giants need bats.
The Giants haven't had a legitimate hitting first baseman in, like, decades.
Yeah. Yep.
I'm going to say, like, Will Clark. I'm not giving you Brandon Belt. I'm just not.
I'll take Brandon Belt.
I'm not giving you Brandon Belt.
I'll take Brandon Belt.
A legitimate hitting first baseman.
James, and that's where the line stops.
That's
right
where
there.
It is, the Brandon Belt line. Yeah. I got you.
You know what I don't miss? I don't miss watching a 220 hitting second baseman that can't hit the ball out of the park at all getting walked so you can strike out the pitcher the next batter.
That's a really good point.
I don't miss it. I don't miss
that
any
is
of
a
that.
Really good point.
They're like, oh, they're strategy. It's like, yeah, just send that guy who can't hit to first base so you can get the guy who really can't hit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe he'll get lucky.
The DH needs to stay for life.
That's right.
It should stay, but I do miss it.
Okay. We also, had this Cam Scadabo from Sac State and then Arizona State, right?
Yep.
He fell to the fourth round in the NFL draft. but he was on the St. Brown podcast. Have you seen this?
I saw the clip.
Okay, so Amon-Ra and Equanimeous, St. Brown, they have their own podcast. And he said he thought he was going to be drafted by the San Francisco 49ers with the 100th pick. And he thought, you know, the vibes were high, the lights started turning on, videos started turning on, and then no phone call. And then the next morning he woke up and knew that, you know, he'd go in the first 10 picks because the Niners, the Giants, Tennessee, all had shown interest in him. And the Giants called, and, you know, so I would have loved to have seen him on the 49ers.
Yeah, everyone wants to root for the hometown kids. That would have been a fun story. That's always, like, the funnest story you could probably do as a rookie.
Well, that guy's a beast.
Yeah. Yeah, he's kind of one of one. I don't know. Like, he's not a fullback or anything like that, but I don't know who runs like him in the league. Where he's just kind of short stout, but just like a little bull or whatever.
It kind of like,
and I don't know, like he's not going to be this every down back or anything like that, but
kind of like Mike Allstott. That's,
yeah,
he used to kind of like, he just beats you up. Even he's not very big, but Austin Eckler, you know, guys who just like head down and like hit people. So yeah, I don't know. I think he's a guy, though. He can score touchdowns. I think at the pro level, he'll be a guy that scores a bunch of touchdowns.
Dr. David in the chat, Peyton Hillis number two. Hey, oh. don't do that. Don't do that. Madden legend, by the way.
Yeah. Wow. Look at that.
One hit wonder.
And again, Casey Tucker mentioned Mike Allstott.
Yeah, I thought Mike Allstott was a little taller, like just kind of bigger, or whatever. But
yeah,
he's similar though. I can see it.
Yeah, touchdown Tommy Vardell. That's a little too early for you.
I was going to shake my head. Yeah.
Stanford kid who went to the Browns and, you know, again, a big-time touchdown guy at the college level. Yeah. I think Scadabo can be that at the pro level.
Yeah.
So, I kind of wish the 49ers would have drafted him. I just think it would have been a cool story. On top of that, DeMar DeRozan was on the Run Your Race podcast with Theo Pinson and AJ Richardson. He kind of rehashed the chaos of the 2024-25 season, and like, for me, it was interesting to watch. I know it sounds weird. It was interesting to watch like a really, really like solid veteran guy who's been in the league for, this was his 16th season, but go through chaos for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm so used to chaos.
Yeah, no, this is not normal what happens in Sacramento.
It's not normal. Yeah. So, like, I can say, let me think, just off the top of my head, Key Smart replaced Paul Westphal midseason. Ty Corbin replaced Mike Malone midseason. And then George Karl replaced Ty Corbin midseason. On top of that, We've got Alvin Gentry replacing Luke Walton midseason, and you've got Doug Christie replacing Mike Brown midseason. So I've seen a coach replace midseason five times.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel like for you media guys out there, it's kind of, oh, here we go again anytime it does go down.
No, totally. Yeah. I'll tell you, I remember when the puke game, when the guy throws up all over the court and then Luke Walton is let go the next morning. We were walking down to the media room, and Brendan Nunes had not gone through this before. And it was like, it was quiet, and everyone was like, okay. And he's like, what do I do here? And it was, and I looked at him, I'm like, don't worry, me and Jason and Sean, we got you. We've been through this a bunch of times.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, okay. I said, if you want to ask a question, but what you don't want to do is ask about the game. Because that's not what the story is tonight. The story is a coach that's about to get fired. And like, we all knew. And then we walked in the media room and it was like peppering around and it was like interesting. But now here we are a couple of years later and Brennan's been through it.
No, he knows what to do.
He's already gone through it again. And you see it coming.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, yeah, no. When Mike Brown got fired, there was no question. Like, I knew a couple of days before and we had talked about it and like we knew it was coming right before Christmas, but then they waited until after Christmas and it was really uncomfortable. Like, right. But you've been through it a bunch of times. So to have a player come through who's a Hall of Famer and DeMar DeRozan, who's been in the league 16 years and who has never been through a situation where a coach got fired midseason, was like stunning. Like, what do you mean you've never been through this?
Well, like, the guy played for the Raptors and the Raptors have never really been too dysfunctional as far as I can think.
Well, I mean,
at least with him.
No, probably not. Yeah, they did fire. Who was their coach?
Dwayne Casey.
He won
Coach of the Year.
Coach of the Year, and then they fired him. But that can be a bad thing.
Yeah, I don't know if that was dysfunction or just more so
George Carr,
because they kept losing to LeBron at that time and stuff like that. But yeah. Either way, like they wasn't like this in Sacramento or anything like that. And then you get to San Antonio, and San Antonio was tip top shape no matter what.
Yeah,
and it's just kind of Chicago was.
Surprising that they never fired a coach there?
Yeah, Chicago was just a playing team or whatever, and then you get to Sacramento, it's just boom, 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 boom. And he kind of fell into a role that probably wasn't supposed to be in when he got there.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. Like, the reason why he ends up being a player who you know, was able to average 20-plus a game this season is because of the chaos.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there should have been a point where you started to transition this team to, like, the Keegan Murray team. And you didn't do it because, like, chaos hit. And then going through, like, having the best player on a team traded. And people can, like, want to argue that or whatever on the outside. Like, De'Aaron Fox inside the locker room and in the practice facility and on the court was, like, understood as the best player on that team.
Yeah.
Like, by the players. Like, yeah. De'Aaron's our guy. Right. So when that happens, that's also like another like earth shattering, like chaotic moment.
Because DeMar during the podcast talks about like it was one thing after another. We're not playing the clip because I think they cussed Aaron or whatever. But he talks about like Mike Brown gets fired, then De'Aaron gets traded, and then like Zach LaVine and the new guys get here. And he talks about how he's trying to find his footing with the guys that are already there. People get traded, and then he's kind of assume this leadership role because no one else is there, whatever, and like he's kind of trying to work with Zach when he's still trying to figure out like the past team and all that stuff. Like there was never a flow that team found at all last year, just based off of what he said. It was just constant, just on the move. Like Doug Christie was saying when he took over, it's kind of trying to fix a plane on the fly, and they just never found their footing at all. Like,
yeah,
it was impossible too. Like I don't think it was just way too much going on for them to even find any sort of consistency.
Well, then you had the injuries happen. Mm-hmm. You know,
people. Yeah, you talked about Monk getting hurt and all that.
Well, Monk, but also, you remember Sabonis. Everyone thought Sabonis was going to be out for the season.
Yeah.
And was able to come back and keep playing. Like, it's just, I always joke around. I have a running thing that me and Del Enos, one of the scorekeepers, the official scorekeepers, we always take a gauge on what we think is going to happen for the season. Like right before the season starts, we throw out a number of how many wins. And there was one season where I said, I think this team can win 45, but I want a plus or minus 8. And he's like, well, no, that we always do a plus or minus 3. And I'm like, yeah, but this season in particular, I think if they let the chaos come in, it will eat this team.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll drop to 35 wins or 38 wins. And I said, but if not, I think they can actually win 50. And sure enough, they traded DeMarcus Cousins that season. Rudy Gay popped his Achilles. They traded Omri Caspi.
The chaos got in.
Yeah, the chaos came to Sacramento. And that's the problem. Like, how do you avoid the chaos and how do you keep the chaos out? And I wonder, like, how much will this change? Like, the Kings were able to land DeMar DeRozan as a free agent. Again, one of the most accomplished free agent signings the Kings have ever had, right? Even if the fact is he was 35 and they had to do a sign and trade to get him, it still was a free agent acquisition. I wonder if this is going to impact the way that some of the like older players might look at the Kings and be like, they're still not a team I would consider.
Well, you look at it because they were talking about in the pod as well, like, there was pieces there. Like, there was something you could believe in. And right now, mm-hmm. do they have something you can believe in?
It's going to be tough.
Yeah.
Yeah. They got a lot of work to do to convince anyone to believe in this team moving forward for this season.
Mm-hmm.
And, like Doug's got a lot of work to do as a coach, but also Scott Perry he's got to go out there and try to find his Shea or his Tyrese Halliburton or his Jalen Brunson or his...
Good luck, Scott.
Or his Anthony Edwards, yeah. Well, we'll discuss that more when we come back. We're the Insiders here on ESPN 1320, 98.5 HD2. You can find us on youtube.com/ESPN1320, Twitch. We're on the Twitter box, all of that stuff. Brought to you by Jiffy Lube. We'll see you in just a minute.
You're listening to The Insiders with James Hamm and Kyle Madsen, sponsored by Jiffy Lube on ESPN 1320 and 98.5 HD2, Sacramento sports leader. Now, back to The Insiders, brought to you by Jiffy Lube on ESPN 1320.
Welcome back in. I'm James. It's Jesse over there. Joe's over there. We're hanging out with you until noon. We'll have the handoff coming up in, 20, 25 minutes. I think Kenny Caraway will be in today. Was that?
No, he was here yesterday, I think.
Oh, then it might be Damian Barling.
Might be a Damian Barling day.
It might be. So
someone will be here. Someone's going to sit in that spot.
Yeah. And then, of course, D'Lo and Casey take over at noon from 12 to 4. You can listen to them here on ESPN 1320. We've had like a ranging conversation today, mainly centered around like what we believe is probably going to be the finals. Tonight we have what is game four?
Game five on ESPN 1320, by the way.
Oh, there you go. Knicks Pacers tonight at what, 4 o'clock?
Then you catch coverage at 4:30, I believe. The game starts at 5, you'll catch coverage at 4:30.
Okay, perfect. So tune into that later on this evening. But I think all of us kind of, like, you can see the writing on the wall. Like, unless the Knicks have some crazy switch that they hit, it's going to be very difficult for them to climb back into this series.
Yeah, I mean, things always get tricky because if you get this one, it's like, hey, you get game six and you're able to come back too. Because are they in New York or Indiana today?
I want to say they're in New York.
Yeah, they're in New York. So if you get this one and you're able to get lucky in game six, hey, game seven in New York, who knows what happens. But I don't see it happening.
Okay.
It just feels like we know what this series is, but it could go either way. But like I said, I just don't see it happening.
Well, that, and I think that we still haven't had that true Indiana game where they shoot like 60% from the field and 55% from three and are just an offensive juggernaut that no one can stop.
Yeah.
Like that game is still hiding. And the Knicks, while like they have some really good defensive players, they don't have a great overall. Like, I don't think that they're a great defensive team. They're a really good defensive team, but they're not a great defensive team. So I'm kind of waiting to see if there's any life in them at all. I'd hate to see another game like what we saw last night.
Yeah, that'd be kind of tough. I think it'll be a lot closer than last night for sure. I think it'll go down to the wire possibly and all that, but it's just like Indiana's playing their best basketball this season right now. You mentioned they haven't had that one game yet, but overall they've been playing really great ball, and it's just the Knicks are always just so hit and miss so far this playoffs.
Yeah, it feels like as soon as you get even last game, I think they had their top five guys all had solid games. Mm-hmm. And they still lost.
Yeah.
And that's where you kind of go, okay, look, you just don't have another pitch. Like, you don't have something else you can throw at this team. So if somehow you just, like, out-physical them and just, like, again, dominate them, like, maybe on the offensive glass, maybe there's a Josh Hart game where he goes for, like, 17 rebounds or something, and Indiana just can't find a way to stop them. But this series feels like it's heading towards a very quick end.
And if it doesn't today, is that a disappointing season for the Knicks? You kind of built your team. Well, it's what we were told all offseason. They built their team to beat Boston and all that. You did beat Boston, but I think you're probably hoping to beat Boston in the conference finals rather than the second round. Like, this was supposed to be a finals team, though.
I feel like this is a disappointing end to the Knicks because the way that the Cavs fizzled out and the way that the Celtics fizzled out.
It was there for you. Like, if you look at it.
Yeah, I mean,
for the team that you built, for the team, for what you wanted to reach as well.
Yeah, and, like, this team, they only won one more game than Indiana during the regular season. Mm-hmm. But that you still felt like the Knicks were a team that were, like, destined for something. And at least to be, like, in the conversation.
It was always a top three. It was never a top four in the East. It was always the Knicks, Cavs, and Boston rather than Pacers, Cavs, and Boston and the Knicks. It was always just the group of three rather than the four. Yeah, so they always grouped in with the Celtics and the Cavs all season long, I feel.
Yeah, and I would say,
expecting one of those teams to make it out the East.
Even the Bucks, I think most people would have put above Indiana coming into this. I think it's really remarkable what Indiana's been able to do. And, you know, again, we give a lot of credit to Tyrese Haliburton all the time here because we have like an affinity towards him. You know, he's a player that we watched as a young kid here in Sacramento and everything else. But Rick Carlisle's done an unbelievable job. And Kevin Pritchard's also done a great job of building that team. Like, that is a very, very high quality team that's built the right way, that has all the right pieces to sort of, I don't know, just outrace you.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm intrigued by the collision course. Like, what will this team look like against OKC? And I haven't even looked to see what they were during the regular season. But you just have this feeling like this is kind of like a destiny, you know, like the teams that are destined.
And if you're the Knicks, and we'll call it a disappointing season, then do you look to shake up the roster a bit? Do you look and call the Bucks and see, hey, like, we could have a Karl Anthony Towns and the Miles Bridges or Mikal Bridges for you? Maybe for whatever picks you want to throw in there. Like, do you make that call, or do you just kind of look towards internal growth?
Well, the problem is I don't think you're going to get a bunch of internal growth, because the players that you have are who they are.
Yeah, they're all established guys.
Yeah, they are very established. I think the way that the Knicks can improve and get back in this thing and be a better team next year is if they're able to add two or three pieces that make sense during this offseason.
If you add two or three more pieces, that's great, but you got a coach who's only ever played seven of them.
No, I get that,
like, do you think...
You got to have players that he can play. Like, I'm not...
Do you think he's too stubborn to, though? Like, do you think he actually will? Because it's not even, like, about... Like, yeah, I'm saying the Knicks can add whoever off the bench and all that, but, like, is Tibbs going to just kind of go outside of his ways and, like, play those guys? Like, I guess my question directly is, like, do you need to move on from Tibbs?
I mean, it's a good question. Like, you might need to move on from Tibbs, but I don't think so. Like, I
lean towards no right now, but it's just, I don't know if I could buy into Tibbs running the 10-man rotation or anything like that.
No, but I think that if you had players that were better than Landry Shamet or
because there's that, yeah, like, it's not
Mitchell Robinson, you know.
Mitchell Robinson's been pretty good. On that one.
They've
been better with him on the court this postseason.
They are, but Mitchell Robinson got hurt and, you know, came into the season injured and missed a ton of time.
Yeah.
And I just don't think he's ever been able to sort of put his stamp on who he is as a player with this specific team. I mean, he only played 17 games on the season.
Yeah, no, he played 17, but he's been good for them in the playoffs. Oren Smith says they need a playmaker off the bench, a monk-like player, Jordan Clarkson type.
Yeah, like Miles McBride, Deuce McBride. He's just not... you can't have confidence in him right now to be that guy. And so I would agree. Someone like Monk would, like, be great on that team. And they're going to have to, I think they will, because of the draw of New York, the draw of a really highly competitive team that, you know, made it to the Eastern Conference Finals. I think you're going to be able to add, like, one or two, maybe even three really, really solid players that can actually step in and help you. I just don't, you know, again, what are you getting out of Precious Achiuwa off the bench? You know, DeLon Wright, they won't even run out there. Campaign, they haven't even run out there. Like, the lack of confidence in these players that they do have, it is part of who Tibbs is. But I don't know.
Wilson throws it in here. He says, the problem is Tibbs can't blame players when Spoelstra's playing undrafted guys. Grizzlies are playing second rounders all year. And he said, okay, so he has a bunch of randos according to James. But, like, doesn't Tibbs just kind of got to coach up a little bit?
Yeah, I guess. You know what? And I'll make this argument, too. When you talk about, like, you know, the randos, if you were to put, let's just say you're going to put Aaron Wiggins or Isaiah Joe or, I don't know, name that player that's coming off the Oklahoma City bench.
Mm.
I don't think Thibodeau will play any of those. And that's what I mean by, like, the randos of the group.
Yeah.
Like, it's not, I'm not being disrespectful to those guys as players, but they're not, number one, they're not starters. They're not in your standard five-man unit. And then on top of that, they're not guys that you think of like Malik Monk.
Yeah.
Like, Malik Monk's not a rando. He's just not. You know, he's a guy that everybody in the league knows that can put up 17.
So you think they probably just need some higher level role players off the bench?
For the Knicks, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. But they're going to have to be level player that Thibodeau respects enough to play. And I don't know if they've got the money to do that, but yeah.
That's where, like, maybe, like you said, maybe you just part ways with Tibbs.
It's tough. Like, I don't think I would part ways with Tibbs, because what's the answer? Are you going to bring, like, Michael Malone?
Maybe.
Maybe. Okay. No, I mean, he's a guy who got a team over the hump.
Yeah.
Right?
Like, there's options, but I don't know if Tibbs is the answer, or if it's just, like I said, moving off of Cat and trying to go for this big, massive Giannis deal or what, but, or maybe just running it back. Because they did get to the conference finals, and this is the first year with this group all together.
Yeah.
And I know us as radio people and working in media, whatever you want to call it, we're quick to, let's blow this team up, add this, add that, so.
I don't think, okay, so I feel differently about the Knicks than I do the Timberwolves. I think the Timberwolves, like, they've put themselves in a situation where, number one, they're not New York. Mm-hmm. So New York just prints money, right? And they just had an ownership change, and it was contentious, and it's finally done. But we saw last year how they did the cost-cutting move. I think that there will be more cost-cutting that goes on here in Minnesota, and it will make it more difficult. You know, I could see, you know, maybe Mike Conley being on the outs with Rob Dillingham, right, hiding there on the bench. Maybe mm-hmm. they go that direction. They're going to have a tough time keeping Naz Reid. He's got a player option of $15 million, and we talked about Julius Randle. He's got a player option of $30 million. He's going to want to get paid this summer. He's going to say, hey, I want a five-year 150 or something, or I want a four-year 120. Like, he's going to want that money, and Naz Reid's going to want money. And then Nikhil Alexander-Walker is an unrestricted free agent, and you could lose him. So you could see them taking a step backwards just because of, you know, like attrition, like basically what happened in the Denver Nuggets.
That's where I think Minnesota's headed.
Yeah.
I think they're taking a step back.
No, I think so too. And, if you look at Denver when they won the title, then they end up losing Bruce Brown. Then they end up losing Kentavious Caldwell-Pope. And it's not like these players are like the best players on the team, but they're so integral to like their role.
Yeah.
And when you lose them and then you're trying to backfill that position with Christian Brown and, you know, whoever else you can possibly find, but you have no money and you have no picks. That's the other thing. Denver has not had picks or money. It puts you in a really, really difficult position. And it's a difficult position because they made like one minor, like they gave Zeke and Najee like a 3-year 24 or something. That deal right there, it's hurt them so bad. Like if they could have moved off of just that $8 million and gone out and found, you know, $3 million players that could have helped them more, that would have been a much better, you know, sort of line of attack. But they're not developing talent in the same way that OKC is. Mm-hmm. So when OKC pays a guy a 4-year $40 million deal, and everyone in the league's like, that seems a lot for that guy. And then he shows up in the playoffs and plays great defense and hits a couple of big shots. And you're like, okay, maybe you were right. And it's just about sustainability. And that's why OKC has such a head start on everybody.
Yeah. Russ in the chat house asks, would you like Mike Conley for the Kings? What's like the bare minimum type point guard we're looking for in Sacramento?
You know, I really like Mike Conley. It's just he's, what, 38, 39?
Yeah.
I don't think so. Like, unless you have – where you would have a guy like Mike Conley is how Scott Perry brought in George Hill to work with De'Aaron Fox when he's a rookie. Like, if you had a rookie point guard and you wanted a guy to be sort of put your arm around him and show him the ropes, you know, whether it's Mike Conley or Chris Paul, like – but the Kings don't have that. Mm-hmm. They don't have, like, you're not going to convert.
No, we need someone to play point guard and, like, actually lead us here.
Yeah, you're not going to be able to convert a guy like Keon Ellis to a point guard. You're not going to be able to convert Devin Carter to a true point guard. That's just not who they are as players.
Yep.
So I don't like that idea. And it's, you know, the Jrue Holiday idea, which has been thrown out there a million times by everybody. I'm okay with Jrue Holiday as... You know, like, again, I think Jrue Holiday, if you take away the age issue, but if you put him in the starting backcourt with Zach LaVine, it's probably the most logical fit because of his ability to play defense, right? And to not need to be a 18 to 20 point per game scorer. Like, if Jrue Holiday is averaging 14 and 6 for you, you're probably okay, right? Because you know he's going to give you great defense. I just don't like the fact that he's, you know, like 34, 35, and owed a ton of money.
Yeah, I love me some Jrue Holiday on the Celtics, blah, blah, blah. I'm pretty out on him as a Kings player, I think.
Well, that, and what if, like, four of your rotational pieces are, you know, one of them is 30, 31 with Zach LaVine, but then 35, and then, you know, Jonas Valanciunas is, like, 32, 33. All of a sudden, you're a team who's, like aging out and you're not good enough to be a team aging out.
Yeah, and like Drew this year with Boston had his worst year offensively scoring since his rookie year. Didn't shoot the ball well at all from three at all. Like he's still a good great defender and all that, but like he was a step slower, I think. I don't think that's really elevating the Kings either.
No, that's status quo.
Yeah.
And that's moving, you know, again, DeMar DeRozan for a different position player. And then you got to go find a way to backfill the DeMar DeRozan position.
Yeah, because it's a lot of money tied up in Drew, LaVine, and Domas. And I assume if you're bringing in Drew, that's kind of like your core three. I don't think you're going to be able to bring in someone who makes more than that. So you're probably not bringing in a player better than those three. And I just can't believe in a team like that.
Yeah, that's tough. And especially when you're going to have to pay Keegan Murray. And what does that look like? And then that messes with your salary. I think the key to this offseason for the Kings is really to start looking at what is your number one option? Who is your best player? Can you get a better best player than what you have right now?
Yeah.
Is there any way to do that? And realistically, if they're 25, 26, they're under contract long-term, or you can put them under contract for long-term, that's the route the Kings have to find right now.
That's the only way I think you could save this.
I agree.
Bringing in a player like that. It's the only way where it's like, okay, like they kind of got back on their feet. Let's see what they do now.
Yeah. Yeah. And I would like to see, you know, again, I think Drew Holiday is like, he's like a solid double.
Mm-hmm.
But they need a home run here and someone who makes them younger and makes them more sustainable. And that's where, you know, we keep bringing up like guys like Ja Morant or, you know, again,
Trae Young or LaMelo Ball and
yeah, player. Exactly. Right. All of those types of players, they instantly become your best player and they instantly make you a better team. Like it doesn't matter what you have to give up to give them. They make you a better team because the Kings don't have enough players to give up to make that would make them worse. So I really do think that that's where you have to start. You know, the starting point is to figure out how do we get a better player here. You know, a player, and to be honest with you, a player that's better than who De'Aaron Fox is. A player who's better than that.
Yeah.
And, you know, someone brought up Tyrese Maxey. Man, I would at least call. I would call Philly and say, hey, what would it take?
What do you offer up at that point, though?
Well, I mean, when you're looking at age and you're looking at contract and all that stuff, I'm giving them whatever they want. I know that sounds ridiculous, but, you know, I think he's a two-way player, guy who instantly comes in and gives you, like, a personality. I don't think that they're going to trade him because, I do think that they're going to try to piece this thing together. You know, we're looking at a player. I'm just trying to look at his years under contract. And, of course, I pull up the wrong team. I think Maxey is a player that you can fully build around. Yeah, he's a 35, 37, 40, 43.5, 46.4.
That's nothing the way the money's going right now, too. There's going to be guys making $60 million a year, $70 million a year at this point.
No, I mean, like, someone may just, like, scream into their car or at their YouTube screen at this point, but I'm offering Zach LaVine and 4 first round picks.
Zach LaVine and 4 firsts for Tyrese?
Yeah.
Honestly, I don't hate the idea of Tyrese, Sabonis, and Keegan.
Yeah, but I mean,
like after that point, you figure out what to do with DeMar, whether he's here or somewhere else. But
yeah, you're talking about a net neutral trade.
It's a solid starting point.
Yeah, and you're talking about a guy who's 24 years old, and that's how you're building around. You know, there are people out there who can say, oh, I really like LaMelo, or I really like Trey. Like, this is a guy who plays both ways.
Yeah.
We don't have to sit there and say, well, you can't really bring him in because you can't pair him next to so-and-so. But, you know, I don't think they're going to give him up, but I definitely would call. And
well, yeah, you need to call every team in the league at this point.
Yeah.
Given, like, it's not looking like it's going to be a rebuild and you're going to try and work this thing on the fly. Like, yeah, call everybody.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think that there's a way in which you can overpay and try to get the right player.
Yeah.
But it's possible that no one takes your call. I mean, that's always a possibility.
Well, Scott, that's why you're here in BJ Armstrong as well. You guys got connections, we heard.
Yeah, you got those connections. So, anyway, we're going to step aside. When we come back, we've got the handoff. We think it's Damian Barling that's coming in. We're not sure who's coming in to join us, but we'll have the handoff. We'll talk more about this game five that's coming up tonight between the Knicks and the Pacers, which should be a good one. I'm James Hamm. That's Jesse Tapia. Joe Brazil behind the glass. We're ESPN 1320, brought to you by Jiffy Lube.
You're listening to The Insiders with James Hamm and Kyle Madsen, sponsored by Jiffy Lube on ESPN 1320 and 98.5 HD2, Sacramento's sports leader. Now, back to The Insiders, brought to you by Jiffy Lube on ESPN 1320.
You do got a weird camera.
It is.
Yeah, I don't know.
It's a light. That's what it is.
Is that what it is?
I usually turn on the light, but
it looks like it's kind of animated.
Oh.
What's going on, everybody? We're The Insiders, brought to you by Jiffy Lube. And joining us here for the handoff, we don't have our snazzy
taking the handoff is Damian Barling.
There it is.
There you go.
I love when James does the host stuff. It sounds so, like, I'm just not used to it. Like, you do it well. I'm just not used to hearing you do the old host stuff.
Yeah, I don't know.
No, you do great. It's just, it's different. We're used to, you know, we're used to Kyle doing all of the, yeah, you know, the little intricacies. It's just different.
I've had a podcast for 14 years. That,
oh, you good? Well, yeah, but podcasting is such a...
This is chill.
It's very informal.
We're chill here. Yeah.
No, we definitely are. It's very informal.
Yeah, because we do not talk about podcasting candles here on The Insiders.
Podcasting candles.
Yeah, like Brendan and Sean always have candles that they light.
Like specific for the pod or just,
yeah,
like,
actually,
I got this lit up already.
Brendan has a podcast candle now that says, "This is my podcast candle that somebody made for him and gave to him."
That's terrific.
Yeah.
I'm not gonna hate candles. I'm a big candle guy, so.
Yeah, I'm all about the scented candles. Like, yeah. give me yeah, something that smells like.
You should be big on stuff that smells good as just a grown up.
Facts. That is accurate.
Yeah. As a grown up. Where are you at with this series that's hitting tonight? I mean, we've talked about the Oklahoma City, Thunder rolling.
Yeah.
But that game, I mean, anytime you're up 26-9 after the first
quarter.
That
was incredible. That was like, well, all right, I could do something else with my night.
Yeah.
Like the whole story was in the first quarter. Like,
yeah,
you can, and of course, like, I didn't turn, I just checked in, watched 5-10 minutes at a time, got up, did something else. The story of the entire game was in the first quarter. It was all right there, and it just played out over four different quarters. Nothing ever changed. As far as tonight, man, I yesterday I thought for sure, like, New York is still in this. Like, New York can absolutely still win a couple of games, and they can absolutely still beat the Pacers. They can absolutely still win this series. But that really flies against the idea that I think the Pacers are legitimately the second best team in the league right now. So them losing three in a row would be a surprise to me. I think the way that team is built, obviously Karl Anthony Towns' availability does play a factor. Like, I'm not the biggest Cat fan, but if I'm the New York Knicks, I'd rather him be out there than not. So
I'd rather have him than Julius Randle.
Yeah, I mean, you could have a trade where both teams, you know, wind up exiting at the same exact time in the same exact spot. So, like, I'm not sure, but I like the Pacers and have already started conversations about how I think the Pacers can not only compete with Oklahoma City but beat them. I absolutely think the Pacers can win the finals.
I wonder if defense is kind of the X factor in that series with the Pacers and Thunder, because, like, the Pacers can run, but I wonder, like, if the Thunder got something for the Pacers defensively, the Pacers can kind of limit the Thunder.
Well, it's the Gorilla Monsoon line from WrestleMania 3. The irresistible force meets the immovable object.
James, you're familiar?
But, yeah, James,
well, I know
knows
those lines.
93,173 people. James was one of them.
Yes, he was there.
Which one is the irresistible force and which one is the immovable object, though? Is it Oklahoma City's defense? Is it Indiana's offense? Like, where do these two things meet? And is the OKC offense good enough to beat an average Indiana Pacers defense? Is the Indiana Pacers well above average offense good enough to beat an extraordinary Oklahoma City Thunder defense? And so the thing with me, especially looking at this series that just ended for Oklahoma City, and this is where I'm struggling the most, is I just don't think Minnesota was good.
No, that's we can all call it. That was fool's gold. I'm sorry.
I didn't think they were good at all.
Yeah. So that's the thing. It's like, hey, you know, OKC was great last night. They deserve some credit for beating Minnesota. Absolutely. You deserve credit for the series that you win. I'm just not going overboard. Like I saw Bobby Marks tweeting, you know, OKC, they keep getting better throughout the playoffs. That's scary. And I'm like, I don't know. Like, I think, you know what I think is the most telling thing? And I can't wait to hear Kenny's comments on this because I know he has them. The most telling part of that game last night was the post-game press conference when they asked Ant-Man about being upset. And he's like, well, why would I be upset? Like, I'm 22, 23 years old. I got a whole bunch of these ahead. Sir, Dan Marino went to the Super Bowl rookie year?
Oh, yeah.
Never went back.
Yeah.
He's been to, and I know the NBA is a lot different than the NFL, but you've been to back-to-back conference finals. You couldn't get over the hump either time. And just like with the idea of like, no, that's cool. I'll be back. Like, Ooh. Oh, man. That to me, that's the Timberwolves. Ooh. The Timberwolves are like, whatever.
Let me tie that in real quick. Remember Trae Young? Yeah, regular season's a little boring now. Ready for the playoffs.
Right?
Has not been back.
One trip to the
level since.
One trip to the conference finals.
Yep.
Yeah.
And he's a handful of games into the next season talking about, you know, the regular season is boring.
Still hasn't got back.
Ja Morant, we're good in the West.
Yeah.
You know, we opened the show by talking about the ascension of Shea. And for that matter, Ty, it's Halliburton. Mm-hmm. And at some point, like, I think we all got into the Jokic, Shea, who's going to be MVP, who deserves it, and everything else. Are we just missing the boat on the fact that Shea is probably the best player in the NBA?
Yeah, we might be. Yeah.
Like, I feel like the league is missing it.
He's very... he has a lot of Jokic tendencies in that they're not loud. Like, the NBA is a very loud league.
Yeah.
It's a very boisterous league. It's a very Anthony Edwards, Steph Curry. Steph Curry will celebrate a three-pointer in the second quarter the same exact way he celebrates a three-pointer to win the game, you know, at the end of regulation. LeBron obviously is, you know, iconic. Giannis is such a physical marvel. When you look at the guys who are, you know, the so-called faces of the league, Shea and a lot like Jokic, they're just kind of reserved. Shea likes his fashion stuff. Jokic likes his horses. And in a league that is just riddled with personalities, these guys don't really have one. Like a strong one that resonates with audiences. And so I think that hurts him a little bit from a public perception. It's like he's one of those guys who you look at and go, yeah, he's good. And then like now that the postseason has gone along and you're only watching a handful of teams, it's like, yo, he's really good.
Oh, yeah.
But like, what do you know about Shea?
Listen, there's nothing to like latch on. There's That's no like, it. Brand or anything like
That's
that.
That's it. Like, what do we know about Shea? Outside fashion is his bag. Like, he loves the fashion stuff. Outside of that, what do we know? They're all team first guys. They do the interviews and the towels and all of that stuff. But it just doesn't, like Jesse said, give you something to latch onto.
It feels like
I think that causes people to miss out on how great he is.
I think he is great. Sounds ridiculous, but he needs his like Rod Tidwell moment.
Right. No, that's not ridiculous at all. And maybe he's approaching it.
Maybe he's going to have it in the finals where he just like lets go.
Or he's Tim Duncan.
Yeah.
Tim Duncan's one of the greatest players we've ever seen. Probably has a strong case to be a top 10 player of all time, top 5 player of all time.
Yeah.
But no one thinks about him. They think about the Spurs. They think about the Spurs dynasty, and they'll think about Tim Duncan and Greg Popovich.
Well, and even the greatest power forwards of all time, the first things that pop in your head, Karl Malone and Charles Barkley before Tim Duncan, even though Tim Duncan was a better player.
Yeah.
And the reason why you do that is because those guys were such big personalities.
Yeah.
For all the youngsters in the chatty house that don't know, like, what's the Rod Tidwell moment?
It's from Jerry Maguire.
Oh, I've never seen Jerry Maguire.
So Jerry Maguire is repping Cuba Gooding Jr., who's a wide receiver for the Arizona Cardinals. And
I was assuming Rod Tidwell was a power forward from the Mavericks or something. I have no clue what you guys were talking about.
No, he's a jerk. That's he's a jerk, amazing. But he wants to get paid, and he's great, but he wants to get paid. I think he's based off of Andre Rison, right?
Is he?
I think okay. loosely based.
I don't think
Andre.
I knew that.
Maybe. Anyway, he has a moment where he kept telling him, like, Tom Cruise keeps saying, "Hey, look, you keep telling me to get to like you want show me the money." He's like, "You've got to dance," and he's like, "I don't dance." Mm-hmm. He's like, "No, you got to dance." Mm-hmm. He's like, "I'm not going to dance for the people." And so he gets crushed on a touchdown, holds on to it, gets up, dances, and has his moment. So,
all right, I'll throw Jerry Maguire on the list, by the way.
Oh, yeah. Jerry Maguire is a great movie. Yeah. It still absolutely
works. I've seen all the memes and stuff like that.
Nah, Jerry Maguire still absolutely works. That's a great movie.
Well, that and you're waiting for him to have that moment, though, like the whole time. And I don't know if it's like who he is, but that whole entire team is a group of guys who don't are never going to have that moment.
Yeah, I don't think that moment. I just don't know if that's him. Like, he's been in the league a long time.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you know, he's been around a while.
26?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know that moment is coming, and I don't know that he cares for that.
Yeah.
He's got the MVP, like, he's staring the Larry O'Brien trophy in its eyes right now.
Yep.
That's the, you know.
It's all this shit.
That's it.
It's all he should care about.
That's it.
Yeah,
and I think that's all it is.
What do you guys got coming up next?
Well, obviously, a lot of this reaction to the game last night, Pacers Knicks tonight. We have some. I have what I think is an interesting Tyrese Halliburton conversation that ties into guys like DeMarcus Cousins and De'Aaron Fox that we didn't have last night, or that we didn't have yesterday. Excuse me. And Matt George will be with us to kind of hang out, talk Kings and Tyrese and these playoffs. So. And honestly, who knows what else?
Yeah.
You never can tell.
Like, Dame's probably got senioritis because he's out tomorrow, I believe. Oh, yeah. So it's.
Uh-oh. I'm out tomorrow and Monday. You can't tell me nothing.
Yeah.
Uh-oh. All right. Well, that's going
to be honest.
Do it.
Y'all lucky I'm here. Man, I'm putting my feet up. We vibing today.
That's right. Thanks for tuning in to the Insiders. We'll be back tomorrow. Jesse will be here. We might have a special guest tomorrow. Thanks to Joe Brazil for working the ones and twos. And that's going to do it. We'll hand you off to.
Do you know what
Casey.
The ones and twos are?
Yeah, like the
ones and twos. You know
the ones and twos. Yeah, ones and twos.
Nope,
right?
nope.
It's not on the mic.
Nope.
We gotta go.
It's definitely not.
We gotta go.